All right, Jamal, say good morning. Let's begin. So first of all, a thank you to these. First of all, thank you to the sponsors of this morning's breakfast. Before we get to the sponsors, a very special thank you and a welcome back to Uncle Mike, Baruch Hashem, who's back from Florida, and a very special thank you to Saeed, Baruch Hashem, who always coordinates all of these special activities, special breakfast in honor of Chodesh Adar. A thank you to our sponsors, to Karen Andrews, Stan Scheinberg, Stuart Scheinberg, and Howard Scheinberg, for dedicating the breakfast and the daf merit and the merit of their wife and mother, Marsha Bas David and Chana Zichron Levracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah and Shem will have an aliyah. To thank Ellen and Sue Meyerowitz for dedicating their breakfast and the daf. To thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Beautiful. Shkoyach. To thank Sina and Sayyid Aiken for dedicating the breakfast and the daf for the Tzchus Refuah Shlima for Avram Rakoyim Ben Zinat. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the brachas, that he, together with Kol Chol Yisrael, have a complete and enduring refuah. And a thank you to Baruch Fischel and Sonia Kozlowski for dedicating the breakfast and the daf in honor of
David's postdoc.
David's postdoc.
And God willing, in the springtime, the
beautiful. Postdoc of David on the upcoming Chasen of the daughter of Pnina. Mazel tov. Shkoyach. So let's begin. So first of all, thank you to Yehuda for giving the daf yesterday. We are picking up Lamed Dalid Amud Aleph Rabbi Akiva Ikla Leginzog. It's right across from Tosos Misanin. It's 2, 4, 6, 8 lines down from the top. Rabbi Akiva Ikla Leginzog. So Gemara tells us that Rabbi Akiva once went to the town of Ginzok. What happens when he got there? So you can imagine, first of all, Rabbi Akiva shows up in any town. By definition, he is a celebrity, he's a personality. So he gets flooded with questions. Bominei, they ask him the following three shailas. Number one, Mis'anin l'shos, or ain mis'anin l'shos. So can you go, literally translated, can you fast for hours? Now what does this mean? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, l'shos kigon, shekibel alav tainis mishesh sha'os ulemalo. Umiu, lotam klomit chila kalayom, avalo l'shem tainis niskavim bereshona. So also, this is a fascinating shayla. So listen to this. So the Gemara says, so Rashi says as follows. You have the following situation. Let's say again, it turns out a person realizes it's 12 o'clock already. 12 o'clock. And they realize they haven't eaten anything. Oh, and first of all, say, a welcome back to Milt Gertner. Baruch Hashem, what a successful procedure. Continue to Fuah Shalema. Wonderful to have you back. And a mazel tov to Ari and Shoshana Lerner on the Hanochas Tefillin of their son Zechariah this morning in Meretz Hashem. After, will there be another Kiddush after 9 o'clock minyan? There'll be some light refreshments after the 9 o'clock minyan. I have light refreshments. You better run out. Super light refreshments. Okay. In other words, eat here. Eat now. Mazel tov. Mazel tov. Yishev Yizochem. Yeretz Hashem to many beautiful years of nachas from your son and your entire mishpacha. So I'll say, so the shaila is as follows. The person went ahead and they just, because of the whatever it was, didn't eat anything throughout the entire day. So let's say, again, for argument's sake, let's just keep it easy. It's a sunrise day at 6, sunset day at 6, and they realize at chatzos, they realize at midday, that they haven't eaten anything. So a person says, you know what, the chaperain, I'll just declare the rest of the day at highness. I'll be makabel upon myself that today should count as a fast day. Why would a person do this? Could be for a variety of reasons. Let's say I realize, you know what, last night I had a bad dream, and I had in mind to be makabel at highness cholam, but I didn't end up doing it. So now already I fasted half of the day, I might as well just accept the remaining part of the day as a fast day as well, and fulfill my obligation for a tainus. But say, that's called mis'an in the shos. This, the primary sugya for this is mis'echas tainus. The Gemara talks about this idea of when a person goes out and decides in the middle of a day to be makabel a tainus, to be makabel a fast day for the rest of the day. Now what's the interesting part in this? Under normal circumstances, they'll say, how does kabbalah's tainus work? If you're makabel a tainus, what usually happens? One of two things. Either A, this is what happens when there's breakfast, right? Either A, a person is makabalit the day before. Usually, again, the paradigmatic example is a person is being makabalit at mincha the day before, even though the tainus might not start until the next morning. They're makabalit until on the mincha before, or that morning. In this case over here, the day is already halfway done. It happens to be I didn't eat, but the reason I didn't eat had nothing to do with the tainus. The reason I didn't eat was because, whatever it was, I was just preoccupied with life. So now I realize, you know what, there's only 6 more hours I could go ahead and have a tainus. Can I be makabel? The rest, the remainder of the day is really 2 shailas over here, Rabbosai. The 2 shailas are as follows. Number one, can you be mekabel tainus midday? Can you be mekabel tainus midday? But the real issue, the real interesting question is, can you go ahead and be mekabel tainus midday, which then retroactively recategorizes the first 6 hours of the day where I didn't eat because I was preoccupied with whatever? Could I go ahead and reclassify those 6 hours as a tainus? As a tainus, that's misanim l'shos. So again, look at that. Rashi, gilum shekibo alav tainus m'shei shos l'malo. Person accepted upon himself the remainder of the day as a fast day, from 6 hours and on. Imu lo tam klum mitchila kol hayom. I didn't eat anything that entire day. Aval lo l'shem tainus niskavim barishona. But I'll say, ultimately, again, I didn't have in mind that those first 6 hours of the day should be the shame tainus. So can I go ahead and accept the remainder of the day as a tainus and retroactively reclassify those first 6 hours of the day as a tainus? That was question number one. Lo hava biyadei. He didn't know. Rabbi Kiva didn't know. Lo hava biyadei means he said he didn't have the answer. Next question they asked him. Kan kanam sho'ovdei kochavim asurim o mutarin. We'll say the next shayla. This is why this is being brought up over here. They ask the following shayla. What about if I get earthenware utensils, earthenware vessels, earthenware jugs from an akum, and the earthenware jugs were used for yayin? So can I go ahead and use those earthenware jugs afterwards for my wine? So they ask him, asurim utarim, again, lahava biyadeh. He didn't know. Bamesh, next, we'll say third question. Bamesh shimesh Moshe kol shivas yimei hamiluim. So we'll say, remember again, the interesting part that we learn is that by the Hakamas HaMishkan, when the Mishkan was erected, so for the first 7 days, up until we get to the Bayom HaShmini, so what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu effectively served as the Kohen Gadol. He effectively served as the Kohen Gadol. So the Shaila asked Rabbi Akiva is, what did he wear? What did he wear? Now I will say, this isn't like a fashion question. This is, they wanted to understand, big day kahuna were given to Aaron HaKohen. But yet obviously, if you're serving in the Mishkan, in the capacity of a Kohen Gadol, you can't just wear stam clothing. You can't wear, you know, civilian clothing. You have to be wearing something special. So on one hand, we know he's not wearing big day kahuna, but we also know that he's not wearing his regular clothing. So what is he wearing? So the Gemara says, lo hava biyadei. Rabbi Akiva didn't know. Rabbi Akiva didn't know. So we'll say, just an incredible muster. There's muster in all of these Gemaras. So this idea is, muster number one is, it's okay not to know. Even the great, even the Hilig Rabbi Akiva, did not have all of the answers. No one has all the answers in life. Rabbi say, you know, we saw in Gemara Masech Shabbos, that the Gemara says, Lamad l'shon chaloma ini odeya, that a person has to teach his tongue to say, I don't know. It's not natural for a person to say, I don't know. No one likes to admit that they don't know something because we feel that represents a weakness. The good news is, the next time I don't know something, just look at the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva didn't know something. It's okay for us also not to know something. You don't have to have all the answers. So what happens? Also, Shalbei Midrasha. So Rabbi Akiva obviously wanted to find out the answers to these questions himself. Comes to the Beis Medrash, asks the Shaila. Omri. So we'll say in the Beis Medrash. This is Tovim Hashnayim Min HaAchos. Sometimes things that I can't figure out on my own. When you surround yourself with good people, you go to the Beis Medrash, you get the answers. Also, Shalbei Midrasha. Omri. Hilchasa Mis'anim L'shos. So I will say, so first of all, the halacha is misanim l'shos, and this is indeed halacha l'maisa. So if you decide a person didn't eat the first 6 hours, and by the way, 6 hours is just an example. It doesn't matter how many hours, 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours, it doesn't make a difference. The point is, at a certain point in the day, I realize I have not eaten. I now want to go to be makabel tainus for the rest of the day. I will say, the halacha is, it works. The halacha is, it works. Misanim l'shos. So Shabbos tells me I can accept the tainus going forward, and what? What's the real kunz of this? Retroactive recategorization of the hours that I did not eat into hours of tainus. You know, Bosai, Rebbe Levi Yitzchak Berditcher brings down, Rebbe says so beautiful on Kedushas Levi, he brings down that, quotes this halacha, you know, Rebbe Levi Yitzchak was not born into a Hasidish family. He found the path independent of his mishpacha, much to the chagrin of his mishpacha. See, he's an incredible Talmud Chacham before he became a Rebbe. See, he quotes this halacha. He says, "Mikan raya gimura l'tshuva." He says, this idea is one of the most incredible and poignant rayas, proofs to the concept of tshuva. Because I will say, what does misanim l'shos mean? See, we think of tshuva ultimately, tshuva, repentance, that I could change mikanu l'haba. But often the Baal Tshuva is frustrated. What about all the bad things I did in my past? Right? What about all of the baggage that I have in my past? So the Rebbe says, you see from here that what? Misanim l'shos teaches me that halacha l'maisa, I could retroactively recategorize my past. I could take those 6 hours that I did not eat. Now, I didn't eat only because I was busy, because I was involved in other things. But yet, you see what? That with a Kabbalah, with a brand new acceptance upon yourself, from your present to your future, you could actually change your past. When I'm a Kabbalah Tainus midday, and I reclassify the hours ahead, I could also reclassify my past. That's the power of tshuva. The power of tshuva, say, is not only do I have the ability to change myself, mikano labo, but the power of tshuva is I actually have the ability to reforge, to remake, and to reclassify my past activities as well. That's the Gemara, right? The Gemara says that a person does tshuva. The Gemara says tshuva me'ava. It's zidonos na'as eslo kizechuyos. You have the ability to go ahead and take your averos and literally what? Reclassify them as mitzvos. How could that happen? At most I could transform them into shkagos. How could I transform them into mitzvos? That's the power of tshuva. And again, where do we learn the power of tshuva? Misan l'shol. So if I could reclassify the 6 hours that I didn't eat into hours of tainus, I could reclassify even my averos into skuyos. Okay? That's number one. Bim hishlim ispalel tfilas tainus. So it wasn't not only that, but if a person decides to go ahead and rework the rest of the day to be a tainus, a person hishlim ispalel tfilas tainus also means I could see anenu in mincha. Okay? Next. Vilchasa. We already saw this in yesterday's daf, that the halacha is that the kankanim, the earthenware vessels of Ovdei Kochavim, are permitted after 12 months. It will say, so if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says, La'achar 12 chodesh mutarin miyad, beli tikun. So we'll say, this idea is that after 12 months, so the kankanim are immediately permitted. Now why is that? We'll say, what happens after 12 months? So we'll see this more when we get to these sugyas. I mean, we'll see some of these sugyas in Avodah Zarah, but the primary sugyas we'll see in Chulin. The idea is, remember, what's the issue with the earthenware vessels? The issue is the bliyos, the absorptions of yayin nesach. There is a concept that ultimately bliyos become what's called nosin tam lifgam. That ultimately, again, they no longer give off a a meaningful flavor after 12 months. After 12 months, any bleos, anything that's absorbed, no setam lefkam means essentially they don't give off any kind of real flavor. So therefore, if you have the kankanim, you keep them for 12 months. We'll say, by the way, this concept is halacha lemaisa for us as well, because let's say, for example, there are certain, we normally assume you can't kasher kli cheres, that you can't kasher earthenware. I'm just talking about, let's say a person has an earthenware vessel, an earthenware utensil or dish that somehow they trafed up. So we normally assume you can't kasher it. Depending on what the particular utensil is, there are certain kulas that apply after 12 months. This comes up often when people, let's say, inherit large sets of china that they got maybe from relatives who are not as nisra with halachas of kashrus, and sometimes it's sentimental values, or they have monetary loss. There are certain kulas in halacha after 12 months, because the assumption is after 12 months, it's no sin tam lifgam. That ultimately, again, don't paskin halacha based on that 20-second soundbite that I just told you. Right? You ask a shayla about it, because it's a little bit more complicated. But the point over here is that even the earthenware vessels of the Akum after 12 months are no sin tam lifgam. However, Rashi includes a very important caveat. Rashi says, "Bimrata lishtamish kodem lachayin memalin mayin." We'll say, remember again, there's the concept in halacha, we saw this in yesterday's daf, that we call milui v'irui. I will say milui v'irui, that's the contemporary term for it, means you soak something for 72 hours, changing the water every 24 hours. So when the Gemara says over here that you could use the kalim of an akum after 12 months, that means you could use it after 12 months with belishum tiku, you don't have to do anything else. If you want to use it earlier, there is a way to use it earlier, and that's called the miloi v'iroi. Soaking 72 hours, changing water every 24 hours. We'll say again, just very quickly, where does this principle become halacha lemaisa for us? The minhag is, Ashkenazim we do not kasher glass for Pesach. That's the general halacha. We don't kasher glass for Pesach. Sfardim have greater kulas for kashering glass for Pesach. Ashkenazim, but derech klal, do not kasher glass. However, if you do need to kasher glass, so how do you kasher glass? Specifically glass that was used for cold items, we employ this concept of milui v'irui, of ultimately soaking for 72 hours, changing water every 24 hours, and that can kasher glass even for Pesach. Okay, so weiter. B'meshimish Moshe, we'll say, what did Moshe Rabbeinu, what did he wear when he served as the Kohen Gadol for the first 7 days of Hakamas HaMishkan? B'meshimish Moshe, shivasim yamilu, what did he wear? B'chaluk lavan, a regular white garment. a plain white garment. So the Gemara says, Rav Kahana masni b'chalok lavan she'in bo imra. Rav Kahana said that it was actually a white garment with what? Below imra also means without a hem. What's the pshat? Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, first of all, Rashi says, Moshe, lo nishtamish abegdei kohuna d'chsiv, aziz abegdei kol d'shlaron achicha, fu hayazar etzlon, va'pi adibor shimesh, v'lo husker b'gadim. So we'll say, Rashi points out to here something amazing. It's clear that Moshe Rabbeinu did not wear bigdei kohuna. How do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't wear bigdei kohuna? How do we know that? Because Torah explicitly says that who wears bigdei kohuna? Kohanim, Aaron. So he clearly didn't wear bigdei kohuna. But again, as we said, we know that he served in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan for the first 7 days. So what did he wear? So now the Gemara says he wore a white garment below Imra. Rashi says Imra, Safa, without a hem. Why no hem? I will say this is amazing. Yesh Omer, Shelo Yechashduhu, Shesam Ba Mitshumas HaMishkan. We'll say, can you imagine this? Why? I will say, because if you have a hem, what could you do? You could put money in the hem. So what do we have to be concerned about? So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't wear a hem, so no one should accuse him that what? That when he went in to serve in the Mishkan, he dipped into the Mishkan treasury a little bit and is smuggling out some coins, some gold, some silver. So we'll say, so first of all, just an incredible, incredible idea. Incredible idea that even Moshe Rabbeinu Rabosei has to live by V'yisem Nikiyim. Everyone will say has to be above suspicion. Even would anyone ever suspect Moshe Rabbeinu of taking money from the Mishkan? The answer is yes, absolutely yes. I also remember again, the Medrash brings down that they accused Moshe Rabbeinu of two things. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was wealthy. Knew, where do you make your money from? Right? You're working for the Klal. Where are you making your money from? Right? Where are you making it? So they accused Moshe Rabbeinu of skimming a little bit off the top. But we'll say that's why there is such a specific accounting of the Trumas HaMishkan literally down to the last shekel of silver. So the Rebbeinu Shalom wants to show this is a financially transparent process. Why? HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to be transparent. That's the Rebbeinu Shalom, Moshe Rabbeinu. Because again, there were murmurings of Moshe Rabbeinu skimming off the top. What else did they go ahead and accuse Moshe Rabbeinu of? Of adultery. Remember again why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu removes his tent outside. It's impossible. He's not living with his wife. He must be living with someone else's wife. Right? It was an incredible, incredible... I mentioned this before. You know, everybody loved Moshe Rabbeinu when? When he died. Right? When he was dead, everybody loved Moshe Rabbeinu. When he was alive, they made his life a living... I once heard, I think I mentioned this before. You know, it's an incredible thing. When you go to a levaya, so what happens when they take out the mace? Everyone stands up. Everyone stands up. Isn't it an amazing thing? This same person, when he was alive, people might have treated him like garbage. But now that he's dead, everyone stands up. What's the pshat? Because when a person dies and you put them in an aron, so it's Judaica. Everybody respects Judaica. Nobody's going to disrespect Judaica. We disrespect Jews. We just don't say disrespect Judaica. When Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, and it's heartbreaking, they accused him of the worst and most. And you read these midrashim. The midrashim discuss the accusations made against Moshe Rabbeinu, never to his face, but always murmuring behind his back. And it's tragic to see. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo kam b'Yisrael kimoshad. Moshe Rabbeinu, again, who gave everything for Klal Yisrael. Yet again, there are always those who want to find fault. So therefore, says Rashi, he served with a white garment with no hem. Why no hem? No one should accuse him of smuggling anything out. Now, watch this. Now, Rashi says, V'lav milsa. Rashi says, but this doesn't make sense, and I'll tell you why. V'lav milsa. Shari kvar nigmara hamalacha ubishas avodah meheichan shakil. Rashi says, it doesn't make sense. I'll tell you why. There's no money lying around anymore. Why? The collection is done. The Mishkan's been built, which means there's no silver, there's no gold. And by the way, remember, in the Mishkan itself, there's no what? There's no storehouse. There's no treasure house. Because the truth is, remember again, one of the miracles of the Mishkan Rabosai was what? There was no excess gold or silver. There was nothing left over. So says Rashi, it doesn't make sense why Moshe Rabbeinu has to have a hem. So Rashi quotes it, because this is what Chazal bring down also, that it doesn't have a hem, so that no one should have any kind of tainus that Moshe Rabbeinu was smuggling out money. But then Rashi says, there's no money to smuggle out. So if you take a quick look at Tosis, Tosis says over here, She'in bo imra, you see that Tosis? The third to last Tosis on the page. Look a line in, right after the little yutes, after the half parentheses there. Ulufiha. Lo haya ba imra lefisha bazel haya mikra yoser chadash. So also listen to this. Tosas gives two interesting answers. Tosas says, I'll tell you why there's no hem. There's no hem because, remember, is this interesting tension. Moshe Rabbeinu can't serve in Big Day Kahuna because he's not a Kohen. But he also can't serve in his regular clothing. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs him to make a new article of clothing. How do you make it look new? So apparently one of the ways in which they made it look new and Mishuna Mishar Chalukim, a different kind of garment, was no hem. Apparently, again, the way they used to make garments was you'd have a hem on the bottom to show that this was a different kind of garment. There was no hem. Plus, the other possibility Tosa springs down is that without a hem, it dafka looks like what? A temporary garment. That people shouldn't say that the reason Aaron took over was because there was some type of psul, there was some type of disqualifying factor in Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs him to dafka use a temporary garment to show that his time serving in the Mishkan was dafka only ba'arai. It was only temporary to begin with. So we'll say, so three different interpretations. He says, V'yesh Mishfarsh, we'll say one more Tosa says, Kimo Imra, Lefi Shebigde Kahuna Hayu Kilayim Kamar, Shezelo Hayu. So some of us say, interestingly enough, one of the interesting aspects of Big Day Kuna is that you're permitted, not permitted, but the halacha was it had to be made out of shatnez. So I guess Tosa says over here that the bigadim of Moshe Rabbeinu, this chaluk, there was no license for wearing shatnez in it. So somehow, again, the absence of the Imra also made it clear that this was not made out of shatnez. So four different interpretations as to why Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately has the hem, but it seems to be the one that's rejected, although the one that's mentioned most often, is this Moshe Rabbeinu should be above suspicion. Rabbi say, do you know where this comes from, by the way? This concept that the hem, the lack of the hem, is so that he should arrive above suspicion. Rabbi say, remember this. You remember our Shkolim days? Ah, Shkolim, right? Do you remember our Shkolim days? Remember again, so the Kohen who worked inside, remember again, they had the receptacle where you were able to put in money, not take out money. The Kohen who had to deal with the Chatzi Shekel was also not permitted to wear a garment with a hem or with pockets. Same idea, Rabbi Say, anyone who has access to temple money, cannot wear a garment that gives the possibility for smuggling out funds. It's not because we're choshed someone. It's just because a person should always live beyond suspicion. All right, back to the Gemara. Hachatzonim v'azagim sho'ovdei kohanim. So once remember again, we saw that the Mishnah recorded in Machlokes regarding the chatzonim and zogim. Also, chatzonim and zogim are the seeds and the leftover grape skins that were used to go ahead and make wine for the akum. So it says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanu Rosei, first wide line, Lamadalef, Hachatzonim v'azogim sho'ovdei kohanim, lochim asur yivei shemutarim. So the Brisa over here quotes the idea that the chatzonim and the zogim, the grape skins, the seeds of the grapes used to make wine for the akum. So lochin asrin, Rabbi say lochin means the moist ones are asr, yeveshim mutarin, the ones that are dry are still mutar. So Rabbi say the idea being the ones that have moisture seem to take on this actual status of yayin nesach, but the ones that are dried out, Rabbi say, essentially have the status of eitz, have the status of wood, and therefore they're totally permitted for use. So the Gemara says, hey minhu lochin, ve hey minhu yeveshim. Rabbi say, what's the status of a moist one? How do we define this? So says the Gemara, Amr Revidum Shmuel, Lochin called Yud Beis Chodesh. So we'll say the item is the grape skins and the seeds are considered to be moist for the first 12 months after the wine is squeezed out of them. Yaveshim La'achar Yud Beis Chodesh is considered to be dried out after 12 months. So we'll say it's a function of the passage of time. Itmar, so we'll say, so therefore again, first 12 months you can't get any benefit from it. After 12 months it's considered to be dried out. Once it's dried out, it's like wood. And therefore again, you can get benefit from it. Amr Itmar, Amr Rabbi Barbachana, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Kishen Asurin, Asurin Afilu Ba'ano. But say Rabbi Barbachana comes along and sends the name of Rabbi Yochanan. When we say that during the first 12 months, when these items are treated like lochin, they're treated moist, and therefore they're treated like Yayinesech, I will say not only is it prohibited for consumption, but it's prohibited for benefit as well. Kishen Mutarin, but after 12 months, once it's mutar, mutar afilu ba'achila. So we'll say, so during the 12 months, you can't eat it and you can't get hana. After 12 months, you can eat it, you can get hana. Amar Reb Zvid, Hai, so we'll say now the Gemara makes a series of statements. Hai Durdaya de Chamro de Armoi. So we'll say, so this Durdaya Rashi says, Shmarim, these dregs, right? The leftover of the grapes, after you squeeze the grapes, the dregs. So these dregs of the Chamra Armoi, of this wine of the Arameans, Basar Chesa Yarchi Shasa Shari. After 12 months, you are permitted to go ahead and get benefit from it. Rabbi, it just seems to be echoing what we just said before. Amar Chaviva Breid Rava, Hani Gulfi. Rabbi say these jugs, Gulfi, Rabbi say seems to be earthenware vessels. Same thing that we learned before. Basar Treisa Yarche Shasa Shari. After 12 months, you're permitted to get benefit from it. And Rabbi say again, that goes back to what we said before. After 12 months, you can get benefit from it, from them. How? Without doing anything. The simple passage of 12 months makes this no sing tam lifgam. Any blios are considered to now be blunted, considered to be dormant, do not give off any kind of real substantive flavor. Therefore, you can use it without any kind of kashering. If you want to use it before 12 months, then what? You need the miloi viri, you need the 72 hours. So you can change the order every 24 hours. Amar Rav Chaviva. Rav Chaviva says the following. Honey, turn the page of Asa Amadeus. Honey, after the time. We'll say, take a look at Rashi. After Chamas Meor of the Koran also Butin. So we'll say, see, these after the Tai seem to be, Rashi says, Tai is Holchei Drachim Nosen Osam Bala Yayel Meirachok Favi Kemachnisal Likium Umishum Haki Boy Shehia Yud Beis Chodesh. So we'll say, these are like large leather canteens or large leather jugs that were often used. We'll say, Tai normally means Arabs. In this case over here, Rashi says it refers to holchei drachim, people who travel for long periods of time. They would keep the wine in these leather jugs for long periods of time. Therefore, the leather absorbs the flavor, and therefore, in order for a Jew to be able to use it, you need the passage of 12 months' time. Amar Rav Acha b'Rav Avika. So Rav Acha said name Rav Avika the following: Hani portsani da'aramoi. These portsani, Rashi says, is psoles shel anovim. Also, the leftover grapes. Basar Treisa Yarchi Shasi Shari. Basar said these leftover grapes ultimately after 12 months become permitted. Amar Rav Acha Brei Durava Hani Gulfi Shechini V'Uchami. Basar so Gulfi, again we keep seeing this, is the earthenware jugs. The difference with these earthenware jugs, Basar says Shechini V'Uchami means that they're red and they're black. Now why are they red or black, Rav Osai? They're red and black as a function of what? Of the absorption. Now the chap over here is these jugs are discolored by the wine that got absorbed in them. So I'm going to thought Rabbi say the following. We've already seen before that if you want to use the earthenware utensils of an akum after he stored wine in it, what do you have to do? What do you have to do? You wait 12 months. Wait 12 months. Or miliver, but we'll wait 12 months. The havamin over here is, I might have thought that if the earthenware vessel got discolored from the wine. So you must say, if it's discolored from the wine, that means maybe there's such an intense blia that maybe again 12 months doesn't work. Not true. Basar Treisa Yarchi Shasi Shari. Even those utensils, we'll say, that are so discolored by the Bliya, after 12 months, they are permitted. So we'll say, now we move on to the Sugya of Muryas. Remember again, what's Muryas? Everyone's favorite Talmudic dish. So remember again, Muryas, Rashi pointed out in the Gemara, was Shemen Shel Dogim. Now remember again, it was this dish, Rabbi said, that was made with like the kishkas of the fish. But again, as we're going to see, the kishkas really weren't put in. They were just soaked in this concoction in order to go ahead and give a little bit of flavor. It was made with flour, water, and we'll see the issue seems to be sometimes wine. That seems to be the issue with the Moria. So that's why the Gemara says over here, or the Mishnah says over here, excuse me, that when it comes to the Moria's, when it comes to the Murias, Murias ugvinas beisunaiki asurin visurin israel of Rabbi Meir. So both say, "Vismachlokis Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is Murias just an isra achila, or is it everybody agrees it's an isra achila Murias of an akum, but is it also an isra hana?" That's machlokis Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So both say, now we come to Murias. So turn Rabbanon. So Murias, turn Rabbanon. Tarabanan, Murias Uman Mutter. I both say the Murias of an Uman is Mutter. So both say, what's the Murias of an Uman? Take a look at Rashi, third line down from the top in Rashi. Murias Uman, Shal Ovid Kochavim Uman Mutter. So both say, remember again, this is by an Ovid Kochavim who's an Uman, who knows how to make, he's an expert Murias maker. So both say, what's the Chap over here? Why is his Murias permitted? So Rashi says, Lo avdi midagim tameya. Sibo says, we're going to see there are two issues with Murias. Number one, did the Akum use non-kosher fish? So the Gemara says, no, you don't have to be worried about that with an Ovid Kochavim Uman. Mishum chamra ka'asvin alei. V'uman lo rami bei chamra kid mefarish v'azil aidi dinafish shumane pam rishon ushin mekalkulu chamra. So we'll say, the Gemara seems to be saying over here is as follows. That if you have an expert murias maker, you could eat his murias. We'll say why. The two things you have to be concerned with murias, we'll say, are as follows. Number one, the mixing in of non-kosher fish. Number two, the mixing in of wine of an akum. So we'll say, as we're going to see, an uman doesn't do either of these things. Number one, because non-kosher fish will ruin the flavor of the murias, and wine ruins the flavor of the murias as well. So someone who has an uman, Rabbi say uman means this is what he does for a living. He takes pride in his murias. Good to take pride in your murias. He takes pride in his murias. He's not going to mess it up ultimately by going ahead and what? Mixing in either non-kosher fish or mixing in wine. That he's not going to do. So Rabbi Huda ben Gamliel, Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, af chilik uman mutter. Well, say so too, not only is the murias of an uman mutter, but the chilik of an uman is mutter as well. Well, say what's the chilik of an uman? Look at Rashi. Chilik min dagim tahorim v'sultanis shman. So we'll say chilik is a dish that is made ultimately again from kosher fish. The name of the kosher species is sultanis. Kedim afarish l'kamal perkin ubekatnu so ein lo snapir v'kaskesa. So we'll say this is amazing. The sultanis fish, this is really amazing. The sultanis fish doesn't have fins and scales when it's young, but it grows fins and scales when it gets older. So we're going to see this sugya later on. But the Gemara says as follows. So the way this fish was sold, it's small, so it was sold in bulk. Rashi says, "Mepnei she'erbuna ola ima dagim tmeim." Domila va'olin ima. So we'll say the issue over here is normally you can't buy sultanas fish from an akum. Why not? Because we'll say when they're young, they don't have fins and scales, and it's easy for an akum to mix in other types of fish, which are. We'll say now, in general, in halacha, there's a fascinating discussion in halacha about fish that don't have. We actually spoke about this. When I was in South Africa, they told me they have this fish called the kingfish. The kingfish, when it's in the water, has fins and scales. When they take it out of the water, it loses its fins and scales. Whatever it is. So as I said, there's a shaila in halacha about this fish. So the beis din are paskin that it's kosher. The way we normally operate in halacha is as long as the fish is going to have fins and scales at some point in time. Even if it loses it or it doesn't develop it until a more mature age, so ultimately it's kosher. The issue over here is that when you buy these sultanis fish from an akum, because they don't have fins and scales, it's easy for an akum to mix in other food items, or I should say other fish, that also don't have fins and scales and pass it off as sultanis. So Rashi says over here, v'hai chilik uman, kevan de uman hu, ubaki bedavar, mevatlin hemena, mishum de lo chashit taima, makalkele, sultanus marle, de kule arvis. Listen to this. You could buy chilik from an uman akum. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because, again, an uman knows that if you try to mix in other fish with the sultanas, what's going to happen? You're going to compromise the flavor of the sultanas. See, a non-uman is going to try to pass off non-kosher fish. An uman, as I will say, in general in halacha, we operate with the principle of uman lo mare umnase. An uman has a reputation to preserve. An uman is going to be very... uman prides himself on the quality of his work. As such, he's not going to cut corners by trying to go ahead and get in some non-kosher fish because, again, the flavor will be compromised. So therefore, back to the Gemara. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Afchiluk uman mutar. Tanei avim rei d'Rabbi Avo, Murias uman mutar. So let's go back and discuss the Murias. So you could go ahead and purchase the Murias of an uman, so of an akum who's uman. I will say why. Ha tanila, so the Gemara says, hu tanila, that's only true, I'll say, in the first and second batches of Murias. However, Shlishi Aser, by the time you get to the third batch of Murias, I'll say, you can't purchase it even from an Akum who is an Uman. We'll say, my time, what's the reason? Pam Rishon Bisheni Dinafish Shimonai Hulo Tzarech Lemermin Beuchamra. We'll say, because listen to this. How would you make Morias? We'll say, this is good. It's a long day today. You might want to try this. We'll say, how do you make Morias? So remember again, you take the fish kishkas, and you soak it in this mixture of flour and water. So the schmaltz from the kishkas goes ahead and gives the flavor. So you could use the same fish kishkas one time, two times, and the flavor still comes. The third time around already, everyone knows, the third time around, right, the fish kishkas aren't the same. So we'll say, what do you do to supplement the flavor? What do you do to supplement the flavor? Wine. So that's why, if you're getting first or second batch murias, you could even buy it from an umman akum. Because first or second batch, the flavor is going to still be there. You don't need to supplement it at wine. Once you get into the third batch already, grade C murias, then you have to be choshish that the umman is mixing in wine. Mikan ve'eloch rai buchamra. But listen to this, Maisa. Hu arba de murias ad asi lenamela de akum. But there was once a murias boat, right? A boat containing a murias delivery that came into the port of Akko. Osiv Rabbi Abba Dimin Akko Naturi Bahada. So Rabbi Abba, now again, they were going to want to sell the murias to the Jewish community. So what I would say, what happens? Rabbi Abba goes ahead and stations guards on the boat. Why does he station guards in the boat, Rabbi Osai? Why? He wants to make sure that what? It's hashkacha. It's not really guards, it's mashkichim. He's putting mashkichim on the boat, Rabbi Osai, to make sure that what? To make sure that what? That they're not going to mix in wine to the morias. Amrali Rabba, so Rabbi says, okay, shkayach Rabbi Abba, ata idna man natra. No, who is the mashkiach on the boat right here? Very nice, you're putting mashkichim now. Who was watching the morias up until it got to port? Amalei, ata idna leman nechoshas. Rabbi Abba says, calm down. Right? What do you have to, let's talk this through. Right? What would we have to be choshesh for up until this point? Leman nechoshla. Imushum dema avribe chamra. If you want to be concerned that maybe what? The akum on the boat are going to mix in wine. Kista de murias beluma. Kista de chamra bedavadumi. It was saying, where this boat was coming from. So ultimately, again, the Gemara says, Kista de Morias Paluma, was a Kista is a measure, Luma is a coin. So one Kista of Morias cost a Luma, one Kista of Chamra cost four Luma. I was going to say, what does that mean? The point of origin where this boat was coming from, wine was much more expensive than Morias. Therefore what? No one's mixing in wine into the Morias, because they both say, it's not a good return, right? It's not a good return on investment here. You're not going to go and take expensive wine, mix it into the inexpensive Morias. It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, who was it? Rabbi Abba felt there was no concern that they would have mixed in wine any earlier, because where they were coming from, wine was so expensive that they would not have mixed it in to the Morias. I guess in Eretz Yisrael or in Akko, wine was a bit less expensive. There'd be a concern that maybe they'd mix in wine. So we'll say, so listen to this. Well, maybe the boat made a stop in Tsur, in Tyre. Right, in Tsur, they'll say, so maybe they made a stop in Tsur. They made a port, what do they call it? A port call? Port of call. You just make that up? Port of call. Right, port of call. They stopped in Tsur. I'm just kidding. Excellent. They made a port of call. That's what it's, that doesn't sound right. They made a port of call. They stopped the boat, right? They stopped the boat. Maybe they stopped the boat and got off in Tsur. And they both say in Tsur, ultimately, again, wine is cheaper. Wine is cheaper. Amralei Hasam Ikuli Pshriga. They both say, listen to this. So apparently, again, boats would not normally stop in the port of Tsur. This is amazing. Ikuli means whirlpools. Apparently, the port of Tsur was a dangerous one. There were whirlpools. And I will say, Pshuri means melted snow. I guess this was the time of season where the snow was melting. And therefore, essentially, the waters were very choppy and the waters were rough. In other words, no one's making just stam a stop in Tsur. So because of that, ultimately, there was no concern that maybe there was wine mixed into the Morias earlier on. And therefore, again, the only concern is now they got to Eretz Yisrael. They posted Mashkichim on the boat. Said the Morias would be permitted ultimately again for consumption for the Jewish populace. Good. Ugvina space unaiki. So we'll say next discussion in the Mishnah was cheese of base unaiki. So we'll say this was the same machlokes in Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says you can't eat it and you can't. It's an isra no. You can't get benefit from. The Chacham says it's an isra chila, but not an isra. But not an isra no. So what's going on with the gvinas of Beis Hanukkah? Mishum and Lakish, mishum. We'll say, what was the issue? What's the problem with the cheeses of Beis Unaiki? So the Gemara says, alright, we'll say, because what was the issue? The issue is, remember again, how do you make cheese? You make cheese with the rennet, with the curdled milk, found in the stomach. That's the coagulant. Found in the stomach of the shechted animal. And in Beis Unaiki, the majority of the calves were slaughtered for avodah zarah. Sorry for avodah zarah. So the Gemara says, "Well, my area rov agolim. Why need to get into the majority of the calves? Afilu miut. Well, say even if it's just a miut, even if a minority of the calves were slaughtered for avodah zarah. Why? Because you're remember again, who's the one who says that it's aser altogether? It's Rabbi Meir. To Rabbi Meir, chayish lemiuta. Well, say Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that you have to be choshish even for the miut. Well, say Rabbi Meir holds halacha lemaisa that." Even when there is a rove that points you in one direction, you have to be choshesh for the miut. Rabbi say, where does this come up? What's Rabbi Meir? Should be choshesh the miut. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Rashi says Rabbi Meir chayish the miuta, but perak beis divam is katan uktana lo choltsin velo miyavmin. Katan shema yimatzi sris, katana shema timatzi islandis. So also remember again, Rabbi Meir Lishitase holds that under technical circumstances, if let's say again a man dies, leaves behind a wife with no children, he leaves behind one brother. The brother is a katan. On a technical level, on meaning midaraisa, a katan could do yibum. Rabbi Meir holds we don't have to katan do yibum. Why about that? Because we're concerned that maybe the katan is going to be a sris. A sris is a man who can't have children. The halach is yibum is only permitted when the union could result in children. So Rabbi Meir says we don't let the katan do yibum because a concern that it might be a sris. The concern that it might be a sris, Rabbi say is a miut. So under normal circumstances, we're not choshish for a miut. Rabbi Meir is choshish lemiuta. So we'll say, watch this. So even according to Rabbi Meir, why do you have to get into the fact that the robe of the agolim in Beis Unaiki are slaughtered for avodah zarah? Even if it's a miut that's slaughtered for avodah zarah, that should be enough to tell Rabbi Meir, that should make Rabbi Meir paskin, that halacha lemaisa, this is aser. The Gemara says, "E armit rov ikamiut." Seinachiname. If we're talking about a real rov, then that would be true. Rabbi Meir would be choshish for the miut. But watch this. Eva e armit miut kevan the ikarov agalam the inish chatan lavados chavim. But say, listen to this. The reason why this doesn't apply here is as follows. Because first of all, you have the majority of calves which are not slaughtered for avodah zarah. Furthermore, the ikonami shar behemus the inish chatan lavados chavim. We'll say, remember again, even in Beis Unaiki, Rabbi say, it was only what? It was only a golem which was slaughtered for avodah zarah. Other animals were not primarily slaughtered for avodah zarah. Suppose it's essentially now you have two robes. You have the robe of a golem and the robe of other animals. And we'll say in that case over here, then what? In that case, that tells us that ultimately, again, even Rabbi Meir, even in this case, there's not even a valid miut. Because Rabbi Meir again, remember again, you have the rov of agolim, and also you have the rov of shar behemos. We'll say this is a miut of a miut. We'll say even Rabbi Meir who holds that you have to be choshesh the miuta, ultimately holds, well, that's what we will call a miut hamatsui, which Rabbi Meir means a significant minority. But if it is an insignificant minority, even Rabbi Meir would agree that what? That you're not choshesh for that. Therefore the Gemara has to go out of his way to say, no, it is the rove of Agolim in Beis Unaiki that are slaughtered for the sake of avodah zarah. Because if it would have just been a miut, then according to Rameh, that would have been a miut sheva miut, a minority of a minority, which means an insignificant minority, and Rameh would not be choshish for that. So let's analyze this. Even if it's true that the calves are slaughtered for avodah zarah, who cares? You are the one who permitted this. After all, the itmar hashochet asabehima lizrok dama lavodas kochavim lahakdir chelba lavodas kochavim. So listen to this case. Somebody shechts a behema. Now here's the kunst in this case. In this case, we'll call him Ploni. Ploni, when he's shechting the behema, doesn't have in mind that the shechita is for avodah zarah. He has in mind that what? That the zrika, the sprinkling of the blood, or the Aktaras Chalba, the burning of the fats, should be for Avodah Zarah. So we'll say, at the Shechit itself, he has no Kavanas for Avodah Zarah. His Kavanas is that, again, for some future Avodah with this Behemoth, the sprinkling of the blood, the burning of the fats, that'll be for Avodah Zarah. So we'll say, see here the Shaila. So what do we do with this? What is the status of such a Shechita? What is the status of such a Shechita? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Asura. So Rabbi Yochanan says, we'll say the animal is still going to be Asur. Why? Kasavar mechasha meavoda laavoda, because the Rebbe say, number one, mechasha avoda laavoda, I mean, we can have in mind from one avoda to another avoda. In other words, you can have in mind during Shas Shechita that the animal is going to be offered up for avoda zara through the sprinkling of the blood of the burning of the fats, and furthermore, v'alfinon chutz mipnim. The Rebbe say, we learn out avoda zara, which means chutz, things done outside of the Beis Hamikdash, from things done inside the Beis Hamikdash. We'll say, what does that mean? What that means is as follows. There's a concept of pigul. The Rebbe say, what does pigul mean? If a Kohen, when he's shechting the animal, has in mind that he's going to do something illegal with this carbon at some future time. For example, let's say at the Shas Shechita, the Kohen shechting the animal, and while he's shechting it, he has in mind that what? He's going to eat the meat in 3 days from now, which is past the window for consumption. So we'll say, what's the halacha? That machshava invalidates the carbon. Even though what? Right now, he's not doing anything. Right now, he's shechting kedarko, right? He's shechting in the normal way. The machshava that he has to do something illegal in the future passes the animal. So we'll say, Rabbi Yochanan holds two things. Number one, mechashim le'avod la'avoda. You could have kavanah during, you're doing something you're doing now for something you're going to do for the future. And we learn out from the Beis Hamikdash to the laws of Avodah Zarah. What we say, yafinon chutz lifnim, or I should say, mifnim lechutz. So therefore, we'll say, just as the machshavas pigol could invalidate a karbon, so too, if somebody shechting la'avodah zarah, even though at the time of the shechita, he doesn't have in mind for the avodah zarah, but he has in mind that he's going to offer up the fats, or he's going to offer up, or he's going to sprinkle the blood for avodah zarah, that makes this, what Rabbah said, this makes this animal into a takravas avodah zarah, makes it into an offering for avodah zarah, and therefore, even at the shah shechita, makes the animal aser bando. The opposite, Rabbi Shimon Levi Omer, muteres. Rabbi Shimon Levi says it's muter. Why? He says it's muter. Why does he say it? Rabbi Shimon say it's muter? Because ultimately, again, he holds en yafinon meavod la, excuse me, en mechashon meavod la avoda, and lo yafinon chutz mifnim. So Amar Lei, taminach shaita. So Rabbi say literally, he said to him, taminach, if you look at Rashi, taminach shaita means Yorum Mazlich. Literally, your good question. Very good kasha. Your mazl should raise you up. I will say, Rabbeinu Chananel says a little bit differently. He says, Tramanach Shaita, Perish Tisa Oscha Shaita Chavadum. He had a good question, but be quiet. I will say, see, a good question, but be quiet means your question is a good question, but it's not a good question, because I'll interpret for you the case. But Omer, Bigmar Zvicha Hava Uvde. We'll say, the case that we're dealing with over here is where the person shechting the animal says that the animal should be a takrobes for Avodah Zarah at the end of the Shechita. Which Rabbi Yosef means what? That already by the time the Shechita is Aser, ultimately the animal is Aser for Avodah Zarah, and therefore, again, Rabbi Yosef, to use any of the curdled milk found in the stomach of the animal is going to be Aser. Why? Because the animal is already Aser Alts Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Yosef, let's just do one more piece, then we'll stop for today. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Shar Bishmo. So remember again, after this discussion, ultimately again, by the Gvinos Beis Onaiki, so then the Gemara got into a whole discussion between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yoshua. Because Rabbi Yishmael is Rabbi Yoshua, why is it that the cheeses of an Akum are Aser? We originally thought, or Rabbi Yishmael originally answered, because they curl the cheese with the rennet found in the stomach of the Nevela. To which Rabbi Yishmael responds, but one second, what about the fact that you could drink the milk from the kiva of an ola? We'll remember again this incredible case where if the Kohen has a strong enough stomach and they offer him the coagulated milk found in the stomach of the ola, if he wants to gulp it down, he has the right to gulp it down. What do you see from here? Now an ola is aser b'ana, but what do you see from here? You see from here that which is found inside the stomach of an animal that is aser b'ana itself is not aser b'ana. We'll say, see, hear this? The fact that a Kohen could gulp down the coagulated milk found inside the stomach of the oat. Don't ask why. It's a protein shake. It's a Talmudic protein shake. Right? They'll say, so what happens? So the fact that a Kohen is permitted to do this tells me that that which is found in the stomach of the Ola does not have the status of the Ola. If that's the case, Rabosai, then what? Then one should be permitted to do what, Rabosai? To go ahead and eat the cheeses made by an akum, even if that cheese is made with the coagulated milk found inside the stomach of the animal which was worshipped for Avod, which shechted for Avod Zara. Why? Because essentially anything found in the stomach of the animal does not take on the status of the animal itself. So this is what we'll say this last week, and then we'll stop. Amar Vachtaboy Amarav. Hamikadish beperesh shor. Beperesh shor niska. Both is an interesting case. Let's say a man is mikadish a woman with the excrement of a shor haniskal. Both say shor haniskal is very romantic, very romantic, beautiful. So let's say, who needs a ring? Who needs a ring? So let's say, first of all, this is much more practical. You fertilize your field. You can do a lot with this. A ring just sits there. So Gemara says as follows. Let's say shor haniskal. Remember again, is a shor is an ox which has killed someone else, has killed a person. Therefore, by definition, the shor is put to death. It can also be, by the way, a shor that was engaged in an act of bestiality is also killed. So the idea over here is, we'll say, let's say the shor is condemned to die, and then what happens? There's excrement from the shor. So we'll say, I can be mekadesh shomer with that excrement. Which we'll say, for all kidding aside, what does that mean for our purposes? It means that the excrement is mutter bahano. It's mutter bahano. Okay, on the flip side, yet, let's say if you have the excrement of an animal used for Avodah Zarah, an eagle used for Avodah Zarah, even Mikudeshes, you can't use it to affect Kiddushin. Why not, Rabbi Say? It seems to me, why not? It's Asher Bano. You can't get any benefit from it. So the Shaila, of course, becomes, why is the excrement of a Shor HaNiskal any different than the excrement of an eagle used for Avodah Zarah? And we'll say, remember, I want to be clear, we'll say, what happens if you shech the Shor HaNiskal? Can you eat the meat? The halacha is no. Why? Because Shor HaNiskal is Aser Ba'ana. So you're dealing with two animals that are both Aser Ba'ana, yet the excrement of the Shor HaNiskal is Mutar Ba'ana, and the excrement of the eagle for Avodah Zarah is Aser Ba'ana. So why did the we'll say, listen to this, we're almost finished. Ibai say Masar, Ibai say Makra. We'll say, we can explain this either with a Svara, a logical argument, or the Pasuk. Ibai say Masvara, could be, here's the Svara. Kabe Egle Avodah Zarah Kochavim Nechale Benafche. We'll say, listen to this. When it comes to the egel of an avodas kohavim, it will say the person bringing that sacrifice wants his egel to look what? As big as possible. Obviously, while the excrement is inside the animal, it makes the animal look bigger. Therefore, again, for the person bringing the carbon to his avodas kohavim, he wants the animal to look as big as possible. Therefore, what Rabbi say? The excrement plays a role in the more zaftig appearance of the animal. Therefore, again, it becomes usher under the umbrella of Avodas Kochavim as well. It becomes part of the Isra. No. If I am the owner of the Shor HaNiskal, my axe is about to be executed, the excrement plays absolutely no role for me. Therefore, it doesn't take on the status ultimately of the Shor HaNiskal. Therefore, it's Mutar Ba'ano. Ibai Simikra. What's the Pasuk? What's the Pasuk? Ksivach. It says over here, Lo Yitbak Biyad Chavim. We'll say this is amazing. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, what does the Torah say? Lo yidbak biyad chamu'uma. Chavosa means what? There should be mu'uma means what? Mu'uma means what? Anything. Anything. You should not retain anything to do with Avodah Zarah. We'll say anything even includes what? Even includes what? Even includes the excrement. The idea is when it comes to Avodah Zarah, the Jew should divest himself of anything and everything associated with Avodah Zarah, even the excrement of the animal. Uksiv Hasim Abba Asher Niskal says, Sakol Yisakol Asher, V'lo Yachel Es Bisaro. And also when it comes to Asher Niskal, the Pasuk says, the Shor should be stoned, V'lo Yachel Es Bisaro. Don't eat the meat. Bisaro Aser. And we'll say, ultimately, again, the flesh of the Shor is Aser. Ha per shom muteres. Rabbi says it's only the basar, it's only the actual flesh of the shor that's aser. But ultimately, again, the perish, the excrement will be mutar. Rabbi says we'll stop over here for today. Rabbi, I'll pick up with Amar Rava tomorrow. Shkoyach.